wartime, October 2nd, 1942. The U.S. has finally joined its allies in the effort. A convoy of destroyers led by the HMS Curaçao escorts more than 10,000 American GIs aboard the steamship Queen Mary as she steams towards Great Britain. German U-boats are stalking the Atlantic, and the Queen Mary's captain charts a zigzag course to avoid torpedoes. As the troopship overtakes her escort, the Queen Mary turns directly into the path of the Curaçao. Both captains believe they have the right of way, but it will not matter. By the time the crew realizes, it will be too late to alter course. What should be a routine mission is about to end in tragedy. I'm Les Stroud. I've survived some of the deadliest environments on Earth, but there are some things that even I might not walk away from. This is Deadly Disasters. Today, the Queen Mary, HMS Curaçao disaster. It's a Friday in the North Atlantic off the coast of Ireland. Britain and other Allied countries are battling the Axis powers in the most devastating war in history. This morning, the seas are high, but the day is unusually clear. As German U-boats prowl the waters, a Royal Navy convoy steams westward. In search of the troopship, it's come to chaperone back to the United Kingdom. American soldiers are joining the war effort. To make sure they arrive intact, six destroyers are led by the 4,200-ton cruiser, the HMS Curaçao. The late military historian Eric Grove recalls her design.
Curaçao was a standard World War I light cruiser, built primarily for operations in the North Sea, operating either with destroyers or with the battle fleet.
Her skipper, Captain John Boutwood, a 25-year naval veteran, is in command of the escort convoy. There are 430 men aboard the Curaçao, including 27 officers. Boutwood recalls his mission.
On June 2nd, 1942, I took command of HMS Curaçao, an old sea-class cruiser adapted for anti-aircraft work.
This October day, his promotion to captain is less than a year old. High above the Curaçao's deck, in the air defense platform known as the ADP, Captain John Cole and his crew are on morning watch. From their elevated platform, they're a vital part of the Curaçao's strategic defense against enemy ships and aircraft. John Cole is in charge of the Royal Marine contingent on the ship. And he's also an air defense officer. Young and ambitious, Cole has someone special waiting for him in Belfast, a young woman to whom he's recently become engaged. He's due to be relieved at noon by the man who introduced him to his fiancée, Sub-Lieutenant Patrick Holmes. But it's John Cole's watch that first sights the troopship they'll be escorting back to port, the Queen Mary. Known affectionately by soldiers as the Grey Ghost, she's easily recognizable, despite her military-gray veneer. Launched in 1936 by the Cunard White Star Line, the Queen Mary is an engineering marvel. Just 60 meters short of the Empire State Building, she has both an outer and an inner hull to keep her watertight. With her four steam turbine engines generating 200,000 horsepower, she's able to make a transatlantic crossing in 5 days with record speeds of 30 knots. The safety of the super troopers, like the Queen Mary, lies in their ability to outrun anything on the high seas. including Germany's deadliest weapon, the U-boat submarine. There are 350 of them patrolling the Atlantic. With their torpedo capabilities, they turn merchant ships, oil tankers, and military craft alike into floating fireballs. Here's Marine historian Eric Grove.
In the open ocean, they were perfectly safe from submarines. No submarine had the speed to get into an attacking position.
Because she's traveling alone, the Queen Mary follows a preset zigzag course to avoid torpedo fire. The skipper of the Queen Mary, 64-year-old Captain Gordon Illingworth, is small and jovial with a foghorn voice. He's a calming, assured presence and commands enormous respect from his men. Captain Illingworth has a preference for zigzag number 8, a maneuver which involves sailing 8 minutes to port, 8 minutes to starboard, and 4 minutes dead straight ahead before starting the pattern again. In this way, Illingworth knows the Queen Mary is always protected by her escort.
He was regarded as one of the best captains in the line.
To aid the man at the wheel, a ship's clock will sound each time a course change is to be made. To further safeguard the Queen Mary and its cargo of troops, Captain Illingworth has strict orders never to stop, no matter what the circumstance. It's an order that will come back to haunt him. Although Zigzag 8 is a difficult pattern, it's one that Captain Illingworth has used consistently since taking over the troop ship 3 months earlier. Though the Queen Mary's cabins are luxurious, the 10,000 troops aboard her are forced to share accommodations. Air Corpsman John Hendricks recalls the packed conditions.
We had a stateroom for two. There was only 14 of us in the stateroom. We didn't have much room to move around.
Hendricks is on the deck of the Queen Mary when he catches sight of the Royal Navy escort led by the Curacao. The liner is nearing the Irish coast. Historian Eric Grove explains how the rendezvous takes place.
So what you had to do was to work out a rather complicated choreography of escorts meeting, taking station, and almost having the liner sail through them as they tried to give as much escort as they possibly could in what was perceived as the danger zone.
Which is exactly what Captain John Boutwood intends to do. Knowing the Curacao is older, he can feel her struggling to keep up with the mighty steamliner. Rather than match the zigzag course of the Queen Mary, Captain Boutwood takes a straighter, more direct route. This way, the Curacao can more easily defend the Queen Mary from enemy aircraft. He orders his convoy of destroyers to head for port, serving as a forward screen. He and the crew of the Curacao follow in a straight line ahead of the Queen Mary as fast as its engines can muster. It's now 1:30 p.m. The Queen Mary is roughly a kilometer behind the HMS Curacao and closing in fast. Down in the engine room, Chief Petty Officer Charles Collinson is one of the men responsible for maintaining the Curacao's speed. Married in 1940, he has just recently become a father. He's remembered fondly by his niece, Norma Hurst.
Well, he was always happy-go-lucky, and, you know, he was having the best time of his life, and he was doing what he wanted to do.
Up on the air defense platform on the Curacao, Sub-Lieutenant Patrick Holmes and his team of lookouts arrive to relieve Marine Captain John Cole's crew. From their time in service, Cole and Holmes have become good friends. Holmes is responsible for introducing Cole to his future bride, and he plans to raise a toast at his friend's upcoming wedding. As he says goodbye to Cole, Patrick Holmes cannot know that he will never see his friend again. A devastating chain of events is about to unfold, one that will be shrouded in secrecy for years. Both ships' captains are about to make decisions that will forever alter hundreds of lives.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
October 2nd, 1942. It's 2 p.m., and in the North Atlantic, the Queen Mary has almost caught up to the Curaçao as the liner continues her zigzag pattern. She will soon pass, allowing the Curaçao to move in behind. The escort mission is going just as its leader, Captain Boutwood, expected. But on the Queen Mary, things are about to take an unexpected turn. The ship's clock signals the next change in course. Watch officer Noel Robinson, a young but seasoned navigator, gives the go-ahead, and the liner turns starboard towards the Curaçao. As Robinson peers through his binoculars at the convoy of ships, he's suddenly concerned. As he spies the Curaçao, he believes the escort cruiser is too close. He orders the wheelman to hold off on the course change until it seems safe to continue. Just then, Robinson is relieved at his watch by Junior First Officer James Wright. Wright assesses the situation. He's comforted by an assurance made earlier by Illingworth that the escort ships always know to stay out of the way. Wright confidently makes the decision that the Queen Mary's course change can be safely completed, and he initiates forward motion. But within seconds, he changes his mind. The cruiser is getting far too close, and Wright orders a hard starboard turn away from the Curaçao. The Queen Mary has now veered from her course. This sudden emergency maneuver brings Captain Illingworth running to the bridge. He reminds his crew they're not to deviate from their course under any circumstance. As Illingworth surveys the situation, he makes the critical decision that the Curaçao is not as close as his two junior officers imagine. According to the international nautical rules of the road, he's confident the Queen Mary has the right of way. Illingworth orders Junior Officer Wright to resume the course change as before. Historian Eric Grove on that fateful decision.
Perhaps it was at that moment that almost the fate of Curaçao was sealed.
Unaware of what's about to happen, some of the off-duty crew is gathering on the deck of the doomed cruiser to get a look at the famous ocean liner. On the Queen Mary, American GIs are doing the same. John Hendricks and fellow serviceman Olin Medley have never seen a Royal Navy ship before, and Olin brings his camera. It's 2:08 p.m. Junior Officer Wright is still concerned, yet he's comforted by his captain's assurance that the escorting ship will keep out of their way. But on board the Curacao, Captain John Boutwood is just as convinced that he has the right of way. Boutwood knows the nautical overtaking rules call for the ship that is overtaking to avoid the other. The Queen Mary is overtaking the Curacao when she begins her hard right zigzag turn. Here's Marine historian Fred Walker.
But by this time, the Curacao had fallen behind, and as the Queen Mary went out, she realized she was on a straight collision course with the Curacao.
2:10 p.m. On the Queen Mary, watch officer Noel Robinson returns to the deck to resume his watch from James Wright. Wright is suddenly called into the chart room to consult with Captain Illingworth. In the quick handoff between the two men, no mention is made of the close proximity to the Curacao. Fred Walker explains.
It's a ship that's displacing 80,000 tons of water and is something like 300 meters long and is going at 28 knots. There is nothing one can do. The die is cast. You can't get out of the situation.
Recognizing the impending disaster, First Officer Robinson orders immediate evasive action. But it's too late. From his perch on the ADP, Patrick Holmes sees the Queen Mary bearing down like a giant guillotine. On the deck below, some of the Curacao crew is already diving overboard into the frigid Atlantic waters. Unaware of the horror unfolding, Chief Petty Officer Charlie Collinson and several shipmates emerge from the engine room below. Collinson's daughter, Ruth McGuigan.
He had come on top deck to get some air, and he was buttoning up his coat. He said that he just looked up, and there, right in his face, was the bow of the Queen Mary. And it kind of took his breath away.
Back on the Queen Mary, the ship clock signals the next change in course. It's exactly 2:12 p.m. The Queen Mary cuts into the escorting cruiser. Eric Grove explains.
Curacao came from the starboard side, the right-hand side of Queen Mary, under her bows. And Queen Mary struck her about two-thirds of the way down, cutting off her stern. And the two parts of the ship foundered almost immediately.
Chief Petty Officer Charlie Collinson is thrown back by the impact and knocked unconscious into the cold Atlantic. Patrick Holmes urges his men into their life jackets. He throws as much life-saving gear as he can find into the water. Disappearing into the sea, a half a kilometer away, Holmes momentarily spots something he thinks may be a German U-boat. Until he realizes it's the stern of his own ship, already sinking beneath the waves. From inside the front section of the stricken cruiser, men clamber into the flooded main deck, waves crashing all around them. Wireless operator Jeffrey Carter is among those who scramble down the side of the listing ship and jump into the water. But the water is thick with oil. Hendricks recalls Carter's desperate struggle to stay alive.
So he was going to swim as long as he possibly could underwater.
Carter claws through the water just under the surface of the oily, freezing North Atlantic. Around him, he feels the desperate grasps of drowning men.
And he said, finally, it felt like his lungs were going to burst, but he came to the surface and he was out beyond the oil.
As the Curaçao bobs free of her stern section, Captain John Boutwood believes for a few moments that he may be able to save the bow of the ship. He stays with her as long as he can. But as the water bubbles up all around him and the screams of his men fill the air, Captain Boutwood realizes there's no hope left for the Curaçao.
Of course, I was alone there, and as the water sort of bubbled up all around, I more or less stepped into the sea and immediately went down with the last remaining bit of the ship.
On the Queen Mary, Captain Gordon Illingworth is stricken. He sees it all, but is powerless to help. Stopping is out of the question. He must make a terrible decision, one that will haunt him for the rest of his life. Eric Grove explains.
To risk 10,000 American soldiers to pick up a few hundred British sailors was, unfortunately, in the grim logic of war, not an acceptable trade-off.
Illingworth turns away from the drowning men and keeps following the convoy to safety. He sends a message to the two destroyers ahead of them to return and carry out rescue missions. He can only hope it's not too late. Chief Petty Officer Charles Collinson, who was buttoning his coat just before the collision, wakes up floating in the frigid water. His niece, Norma, explains.
And something, a piece of debris from the boat had somehow got caught in his, between the buttons, and was actually keeping him afloat. He can basically thank a piece of debris for saving his life. And all around him were people screaming and crying and crying out for help and clinging onto wreckage, whatever they could cling on to, I guess, to survive.
Floating debris, coated with fuel oil, is everywhere. Patrick Holmes, the man on lookout up on the air defense platform, comes to the surface. He finds one of the rolled-up life-saving devices floating in the water. Unable to open it, he hangs on for dear life. In the oil-covered wreckage, Captain Boutwood is also fighting to stay alive. Charles Collinson, still attached to the floating debris, is an athletic, strong swimmer. He untangles himself. And tries desperately to save several of his mates as they struggle around him.
Unfortunately, he had to watch some of his friend drown, especially a gentleman that had been at Uncle Charlie's wedding.
Collinson can only watch helplessly as they descend into the cold blackness. According to his daughter, Ruth, he would never be the same again.
I think that's what was devastating to him. Not necessarily what happened to him, but his experience of the surroundings.
It will be 2 hours in the icy water before rescue arrives. Survivor Jeffrey Carter will later recall his elation at the moment of his rescue, a feeling that quickly dulls when he sees he's one of the few, recalls Corpsman John Hendricks.
A lot of those survivors, according to Jeff Carter, had breathed in oil. And there was no way they were going to clear that out of their lungs. So apparently a lot of the guys, even though they were picked up by the standby ships, still died from their lungs being flooded with the oil.
Within minutes of her collision with the Queen Mary, the military cruiser Curaçao, with a crew of 430 men, comes to her final resting place on the floor of the Atlantic. Of the 430 men aboard the Curaçao that fateful October afternoon, 338 never make it home. Most die within minutes of the collision. Of the 27 officers on board, only Captain Boutwood and Patrick Holmes survive. 28 Royal Marines aboard also perish, including the man Holmes relieved on the air defense platform, his good friend, Captain John Cole. Troops on the Queen Mary have just witnessed a horror unfold before their very eyes, and they remain powerless to stop it. Here's John Hendricks on that moment.
I don't think any of us really realized how many people was on the Curaçao. It looked like such a small ship compared to the Queen Mary.
The tragedy of the collision cannot be revealed immediately, as doing so could divulge critical seafaring routes to German U-boats. The details will remain hidden to the public until the end of the war in 1945. Almost immediately, the British Admiralty takes the Queen Mary's owners, the Cunard White Star Line, to court for the loss of the Curaçao. The case before the High Court Justice lasts a year and a half. Incredibly, the court finds that both ships' captains believed they had the right of way. Marine historian Fred Walker.
It was then found that the Admiralty were two-thirds to blame and Cunard one-third to blame. Now, this was a victory in its own way. Those who had lost beloved ones could then go to take civil action because of the suffering and loss that they had sustained.
The captains of the two ships each go on to new assignments. Historian Eric Grove.
Illingworth went on to be Commodore of the Cunard White Star Line. He was considered to have been a successful commanding officer of Queen Mary.
Captain Boutwood of the doomed Curaçao was given command of minesweepers in the Mediterranean. At the end of the war, he was a distinguished commander. Recalling the tragedy of the Curaçao, here is Captain John Boutwood.
Apart from giving my testimony at the Admiralty's Board of Inquiry, and again in the law courts a long time later, I have never made any personal comments on the cause of the disaster. I am not going to break that rule now, other than to say that no sense of guilt or shame has ever given me a sleepless moment.
The immediate consequence of the Curaçao tragedy is a change in naval policy regarding protection of the super troopers. They will no longer escort the large liners carrying troops at all. For the survivors of the disaster, life is a blessing. But it's never quite the same. Many report suffering nightmares for years afterward. Charles Collinson will remain a Navy man until his retirement, but the events of October 2, 1942 will forever shape his life. His daughter Ruth.
he became what I call sort of like a scared man. He was not a risk taker, so he lost that sort of spontaneity that he had when he was a younger man.
It will take almost 50 years for the survivors of the Curaçao to reunite. By then, the tragedy will have largely been forgotten. Historian Eric Grove explains.
It was, in a sense, a byway of the Second World War. If you go on board the Queen Mary, there is a display which tells the story, but it isn't something that is in the forefront of people's minds.
Though the loss of the Curaçao and her crew finally becomes public at the end of the war, the hell experienced during those last desperate moments can never be fully understood. For those like John Hendricks who witnessed her destruction, the memory of that day will always be with them.
It was a horrible thing. It's a part of history, and nobody's going to change it. You have to realize that war is war, and lives are lost, and you live and enjoy what you can while you can, and that's about the whole thing in a nutshell.
Today, the location of the wreck of the Curaçao is a protected site just off the coast of Ireland. She's more than a shipwreck. She's also a mass grave, one containing the remains of over 300 sailors. To this day, her destruction continues to be one of the Second World War's best-kept secrets. This episode of Deadly Disasters was produced by Ajit Parkal and Miklas Perlis for Storios, adapted for audio by Lisa Brook, and sound designed and mixed by Brian Eimer at Images and Sound. This podcast is adapted from the television series Disasters of the Century. Our executive producer is Ron Getz, and our supervising producer is Robert Lachlan. Deadly Disasters is a production of Partners in Motion. I'm Les Stroud.